You're listening to Women's Magazine here on KPFA 94.1 FM. I'm Raquel Martinez Sharp. The war in Afghanistan recently entered its eighth year, and controversy rages over what President Obama should do to end it. Feminist groups are also split on the issue on how to support women's rights. The feminist majority has called for expanding foreign peacekeeping forces, along with reconstruction projects aimed at increasing women's education and freedom. Sonali Kolhatkar of the Afghan Women's Mission and our sister station KPFK has criticized feminist groups for lending their good names to the war effort. She writes, "Feminists around the world must refuse to allow the good name of feminism to be manipulated to provide political cover for yet another war of aggression." Recently, Bay Area audiences had the opportunity to hear firsthand from feminists living and working in Afghanistan. Zoya, a 28-year-old leader of the Revolutionary Association of the Women of Afghanistan, spoke last month to a packed house in San Francisco. Here's part of what she had to say.
I think, unfortunately, the expression that the world has got is that Afghanistan has been liberated by the United States. Afghanistan is a free country now, which I think, in one sense, it's very true. Yes, Afghanistan is a free country now for the rapists to rape our children and our women. Afghanistan is a free country for the drug lords who have made Afghanistan the biggest producer of opium in the world. Today we produce 93% of the opium of the world. Afghanistan is free for the United States and NATO troops to kill our civilians on daily basis by so-called mistakes. In that sense, Afghanistan is a free country. But Afghanistan is not free for the majority of the population of the country, for the poor people of Afghanistan living in 34 provinces. Today we heard and we have two kinds of pictures of Afghanistan. One picture is the unreal image of Afghanistan, which is portrayed and presented by the official media like Fox News or CNN or by our corrupt governmental officials, which we consider the unreal image of Afghanistan, the censored image of Afghanistan, the filtered image of Afghanistan. But there's another image of Afghanistan, another picture of Afghanistan portrayed by the majority of the people of Afghanistan, poor people of Afghanistan, democratic organizations like RAWA, human rights organizations like Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch. We think that that's the true picture of Afghanistan. And I'd like to focus on that picture of Afghanistan today. In the past 8 years, we had thousands of troops inside the country. We have today about 42 foreign countries present in Afghanistan. And billions of dollars poured into the country. But let's see what's the picture of our nation under the occupation of United States and NATO troops. 8 years ago, United States came under three main justifications to occupy Afghanistan. The main justification which was used to legitimize this war, and this was liberation of Afghan women, the first justification. The second justification was bringing democracy or establishment of democracy, and third justification was so-called war on terror. So let's see these justifications, these tall claims, that whether we really established democracy and whether terrorism was eliminated or not. When we talk about women's liberation, especially when RAWA talk about Afghani women, we mean 95% of the poor Afghani women, majority living in different provinces of Afghanistan. The 5% or 10% of the ministers or members of parliament or rich women or rich businessmen's daughter or wives inside Kabul, the capital city of Kabul. Kabul is a very small city. It's a capital city. It's the focus of international troops. It's the focus of international media. And it's the focus of international community. Kabul is not all Afghanistan. We have to see all Afghanistan. We have 34 provinces. And if you go to 34 provinces, you will see that Afghan women, from one side, they are suppressed by domestic violence by their husbands, brothers, and fathers. And from other side is fundamentalist violence. We strongly believe that even the domestic violence is very much dependent on the general political situation, on the government of Afghanistan. because all the authorities, even the police of Afghanistan, the members of parliament of Afghanistan, are deeply involved in these crimes. I'm not going to talk about the women's condition in details, but I just want to give you some examples which may help you to imagine the situation of Afghan women and children. Just a couple of months ago, a 14-year-old girl in the name of Bashira was gang raped by the son of the member of parliament of Afghanistan. And she was belonging to a very poor family. The father of the girl cried and shouted for justice, but there was no justice for her. So the father of the girl threatened Karzai, the president of Afghanistan, that if you're not giving me justice, if you're not giving my daughter justice, I'll be the suicide bomber. But despite of this threat, there was no justice for this girl. Just a month after this case, another 13-year-old was gang raped by 8 men, and 3 of them were top police officers of Afghanistan. Just a week after that, another woman was gang raped by 13 men. And what was the shameful action of our prison? To pardon the rapist after 3 nights, because they had links, powerful links with the fundamentalist commanders. So you can imagine that when starting from the president of Afghanistan, the members of parliament, the judiciary, the police, everyone is so deeply involved in the crimes. What option left to a woman? The only option that our young girls and our women have today is committing suicide. It's self-immolation is increasing day by day to burn themselves. If you go to the western provinces of Afghanistan, particularly Herat province, when you go to the hospitals, many, many young girls burnt themselves because due to hopelessness, due to disappointed that they had for any peace and security and justice, but unfortunately there is not. When I'm traveling here, sometimes it's quite painful and sometimes it's quite offensive that people say that the women of Afghanistan has been liberated by the United States. And the only sign of liberation that they see is that the doors of schools, the doors of universities are now open. It's not closed like the Taliban time. Yes, the doors of schools are open. Practically, majority of the families do not want to send their daughters to school because on the way to school, they are being kidnapped, killed, abducted, gang raped, forced to marry the powerful gunmen. And many times the acid incidents happen that they throw acid on the face of the students who are going to school. About 600 schools were burnt within a year. So obviously no parents want to send their children with so serious risks. For example, the burqa is another sign of liberation of women to the Western people. But we think that a burqa is a very symbolic sign of liberation. Liberation of women means a lot more than wearing and not wearing the burqa. Even now we are not legally forced to wear the burqa, but practically everyone in the different provinces prefer to wear the burqa because of insecurity. If I talk about the second justification of United States, which was to bring democracy for our people and to our nation, if we consider, for example, election as a sign of democracy, I think everyone heard about what kind of fraudulent election we had. It was a painful insult to democracy. It was a kind of dirty game being played with the destiny of our people. When you go to Kabul, when you ask people that do you vote or what do you think about election, they usually say that already our president is selected and determined by the White House, so we really do not need to go to ballot boxes. Rather, from the very beginning, we condemn this election because we consider that election, as I said, a mockery of democracy and an insult to our nation. Many people think that instead of Karzai, someone else will come. We always said that maybe instead of Karzai, another Karzai will come with another face, with another name, but with the same puppet nature. So it will not bring any radical change in the politics of Afghanistan. We have a very famous proverb that the same donkey with the new saddle. So it's like that, the outcome of the election. And we see today that there's another person, another candidate in the name of Abdullah Abdullah who is running the election campaign. I mean, everyone should know in the West, but at least every Afghan had really bad experience under Abdullah Abdullah, because from 92 till 94, Northern Alliance groups ruled Afghanistan, and Abdullah Abdullah was the foreign minister. He is one of the top criminal leaders. He is a war criminal who should be prosecuted, who should be tried, not to run election campaigning to be president of Afghanistan. But unfortunately, this is the United States' wrong policy, who is supporting Northern Alliance groups in order to defeat Taliban. So they are relying on one terrorist in order to defeat another terrorist. This was the wrong policy of United States in the past 30, 35 years, which resulted to their failure today, despite of the thousands of troops, despite of the billions of dollars, and despite of the presence of 42 countries. So this was the outcome of the election. It also, Rao from the very beginning said that a country which is ruled by the terrorist, a country which is ruled by the war criminal, a country which is ruled by the dreadlords, a country which is ruled by the mafia, how we can expect in such a country a fair and free election? If I talk about freedom of speech and expression as another sign of democracy, to see that what kind of democracy today we enjoy, the journalists have very tough and threatening life in Afghanistan. Many women and men journalists have been killed, because just a single word against the warlords and dreadlords can result to their murder. I just give you an example to show and to see the state of the freedom of speech and expression in Afghanistan. Parvez Kambakhsh is a 22-year-old student of the journalist department. He printed an article about women and religion, and he distributed among his friends. Just this act of this boy resulted to his sentence to death. And after many pressure, international pressure, the human rights organizations, they reduced it to 17 years of prison. And just in the election campaign, for the election campaign, and because of the many pressures, the Karzai government released him. So this is the state of the freedom of expression and opinion. Organizations like Rawa, just because we believe in democracy, just because we are against both kind of fundamentalists, Northern Alliance and Taliban, because of this we are not registered, we are underground, we cannot openly work inside Afghanistan. Our leader was killed by the fundamentalists, our demonstrations have always been attacked, and we are under pressure and a lot of problems. Some democratic voices like Malala Joya, she was one of the brave, the youngest member of parliament. I can say the only member of parliament who stood up in the parliament, who raised the voice of her people. I consider her as the real representative of the people of Afghanistan, the women of Afghanistan. And she said to these terrorists who are sitting in the parliament, to these rapists, to these war criminals, that your place is not the chairs of the parliament. You should be prosecuted for your war crimes, the trial. And because of that, they expelled her from parliament, because they have so much power inside the three organs of the government. So this is the state of democracy in Afghanistan, the democracy that the United States brought to us. Rawa, from before even 11 September, we always said that democracy and secularism and women's rights, these values cannot be brought in the pockets of the soldiers to Afghanistan. We can't brought these values in the airplanes of United States or in the helicopters of the Western powers.
I'm Raquel Martinez Sharp, and this is Women's Magazine at listener-sponsored KPFA in Berkeley. We'll take a short musical break and then listen to more from Zoya, a remarkable 28-year-old spokeswoman for the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan.
I sing for the mothers all over the earth, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers all over the earth, for their sorrow, for their love. May their broken hearts be cradled, may their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth. I sing for the mothers of
powers at war, for their power, for their love. I ache for the mothers of soldiers at war, for their sorrow, for their love.
May their broken hearts be cradled, may their righteous anger be heard. I pray for justice and healing for all of the mothers all over the earth.
If I talk about the third and the final justification of United States to occupy Afghanistan, which was so-called war on terror or war against terrorism, again we see that terrorism, with thousands of troops, with the passage of 8 years, with the 42 countries, and with billions of dollars, today 80% of Afghanistan is ruled by the Taliban. It's a big shame for international community that the Taliban are increasing in numbers, they are getting more powerful, they are getting more stronger, and it's because of, the wrong policy of United States, that they failed in the elimination of terrorism. First of all, we see that they are bombing our villages. There's a kind of hypocrisy. We always said that United States government is unfortunately really not honest in the claim of being against terrorism. Because first of all, when they came 8 years ago, it was a big question for our people. At the beginning, 8 years ago, our people had really high hopes that maybe after 30, 35 years with such tall claims of democracy and liberation of women and elimination of terrorism, we at least breed in some democratic nation, or at least we will see some peace and security. But very soon they realized that United States is collaborating, is compromising and supporting another terrorist, which is Northern Alliance, that our people have really dark experience under them from 92 till 94. So this was something which crashed the hope of our people for democracy and for liberation. And today we see that again, even in the fighting against Taliban, they are bombing our villages from one side, and they are killing every night innocent civilians, innocent women and children under the banner of war on terror. And they're attacking the wedding parties of the people. They're attacking the wedding of parties of those people who are already really sorrowful in their suffering. And they're turning their happiness parties to grief under the war on terror. But from the other side, we see that inside the parliament of Afghanistan, the leader of the Taliban, the real policy maker of the Taliban, is enjoying seats of parliament. They have their leaders in the judiciary of Afghanistan. They have their members in the cabinet of Afghanistan. And the United States government, through Karzai government, is trying to negotiate with the leaders of the Taliban. They are trying to give them more space and more shares in the government. So there is a kind of hypocrisy of these governments, that from one side you are killing our civilians under the name of terrorism, but from the other side, you are compromising and negotiating with the leaders and the policymakers of the Taliban. So it's a really dishonest fact which raised many questions in the mind of our people. I just can't forget the face of this woman, that they put bombs in a village, and in the morning when they went, there was about 150 dead bodies of women and children, completely innocent. And the woman was shouting, the mother of a child who was killed, that was my two-year-old son was a terrorist that you killed, was my handicapped father was a terrorist that you killed, our blood is not that much red as the Western blood. What would happen, for example, if a terrorist killed in one night, not 150, just 50 Western people? They will shake the world for that. But our blood has no value, I think, or it's completely valueless blood in the world, that no one is thinking about that. So we see that this is the hypocrisy of these governments, that they're bombing, they're killing civilians, but they're compromising and negotiating with the leaders. Rawal, from the very beginning, we warned the governments that instead of targeting the fishes, you should target the real dangerous sharks inside the parliament, inside the judiciary of Afghanistan, inside the government of Afghanistan. What they are doing today, that they are killing the very young paid soldiers in the ranks of Taliban. which are not ideologically believing with the Taliban. They are just paid soldiers. They are fighting in the ranks of the Taliban because of the money, not because they're really believing. Because they want to feed their children, they are going and join the Taliban's rank. Or we have another soldiers which just joined the Taliban's rank because of the revenge. I just remember that a young boy, in one night, he lost 13 members of his family. And tomorrow he went and joined the Taliban's rank as a revenge. So what they are doing today, that they are killing these innocent, I consider them innocent, as I consider also the American soldier innocent. Because some of the young American soldiers believe that they are bringing democracy for this nation. And we really feel sorry for them. They are kind enough to come in Afghanistan and fight for us, but they don't know that they are the victims of the wrong policy of their government. So in the same way, they are killing these innocent, very young, paid soldiers in the ranks, the very lower ranks of the Taliban. And then we see that there is a breaking news that we attacked the bases of Taliban and we killed them and this and that. So it's a kind of deceiving the world. And also there is another question which shows the dishonesty of the government, that it's a big question for all the people in Afghanistan, that if United States is coming in Afghanistan to bring or establish democracy, why they're isolating and ignoring democratic forces? For example, Rawa, we went to them. We went to them, to their embassies. We went to United States embassy. We went to British embassy. We said that we criticize your wrong policy. You should target the Northern Alliance, the other terrorists too, and you should support democratic forces if you're honest that we want to support democracy in Afghanistan. We never heard from them. For example, at least United States government, the embassy was silent, which was, I think, better than the UK, because UK gave us a really ridiculous answer that if you change your name from revolutionary, we are start helping you.
Sure.
So this shows the dishonesty of the governments again, that if you're there to support democracy, why you're not supporting the grassroots political democratic organizations inside Afghanistan? Even Obama was talking about corruption of Afghanistan government. But we strongly believe that corruption and drug and women's rights violation, human rights violation, these all are the effects of one cause. The one cause is domination and support they are giving to Northern Alliance groups and the presence of Taliban. As long as we have this cause, we cannot talk about the women's liberation or drug or corruption or these things. And we think that throwing more troops is not a solution for Afghanistan, because throwing more troops means more killings of the civilians. We think that United States need a radical change in the wrong foreign policy in Afghanistan, which unfortunately they are continuing for more than 30 and 35 years. And they are not learning from their mistake, because we can't forget that these fundamentalist groups were created by CIA during the Cold War against Soviets. We can't forget this fact. It's a part of the history. So what United States really need to withdraw the troops as soon as possible from Afghanistan, because waging war and occupation does not bring liberation. That's a fact which is proved in the 8 years. And we always said that we suggest them that you should withdraw the troops, but if you really feel sorry for the people of Afghanistan, if they are really kind enough to help us, you have other alternatives which you can use. The other alternatives, the first thing that we think is very effective is to disarm the fundamentalist groups that they armed for us. So as long as there's no disarmament, the democratic organizations, parties, and movements cannot play their role. Because, for example, in one province, a democratic person wanted to candidate himself. Tomorrow, he received a phone call from the fundamentalist commander, who has full arms, who has full support of United States, that either give up or to be killed. So obviously, democratic forces who have no gun, they're under pressure from fundamentalist side. So as long as they have arms, we cannot talk about free election or democracy in Afghanistan. As I said, that the withdrawal will just affect the 10% of the rich businessmen, who are building city centers for the foreign NGOs, for the foreign troops, for the rich Afghans, for the drug lords, for the warlords, they will definitely lose protection. But 95% already we are under the shadow of gun and warlords and terrorism. So for majority the situation can't be worse. It's already really worse for everyone. And also I think no nation will accept occupation forever. So 8 years we were already occupied, they occupied Afghanistan. We already lost our pride as a nation. And I think no nation will accept that. And as we said that if they are really feeling sorry, they have other alternatives. Without the troops, without the occupation, they can help the situation. If they say that we will stay like for 5 months, for a very short, limited time, in order to do this specific objective, I think we will welcome them. Because they armed for us, these groups, they should also disarm them. But it's now we see that this occupation is for unlimited time without any positive outcome. The only thing that they did that they increased additional problem of the bombing of our villages and the US NATO bombs. This is just an additional problem. Today, we as a democratic forces are like caught up between four sides. From one side is the terrorism of the Taliban, the suicide bombs of the Taliban. They are, you know, the areas that they are ruling, they are cutting the hands of people, they are stoning to death. They are the same as before, even more powerful, I can say. From the other side is Northern Alliance. The provinces which is ruled by Northern Alliance, there are rape, gang rapes, drugs coming to 93%, and many other problems. From other side is the corrupt Karzai government, full of corruption and full of drug and full of, you know, they are not doing anything, but they're just increasing the problem. And we have additional problem of the 42 countries with thousands of troops and the occupation. Instead of facing three main obstacles, for us it's better to have clear two enemies, Northern Alliance and Taliban. So today, what they are doing that they are supporting Northern Alliance fundamentalist commanders. And why they are not successful? Because they are supporting Northern Alliance fundamentalists, and Northern Alliance is very much happy from this situation. They don't want Taliban to be eliminated because they think that if Taliban will be eliminated, we will lose our support from United States, as they are getting millions of dollars from United States in this war on terror. So we think that they should change their policy in order to eliminate terrorism from Afghanistan. But they are not doing that. So what United States really need is a strategical change in their policy. And even if they cannot help us, then it's better to leave and leave our people with our own enemies, because they're not helping us at the moment. They are just have additional problem of bombing our villages and empowering our other enemies, Northern Alliance. So instead of that, it's better to leave. Even if we die in the civil war, we prefer to die in the civil war instead of being occupied forever without any positive outcome. But as I said, the peacekeeping forces, we will welcome them. The NATO forces, we will welcome them if they change their policy. And that's why I think the movements in America have a lot of power. If they really get powerful to raise their voices, to make it louder and louder, and to shout on President Obama not to send more troops because it's equal to more civilian death, but change your policy of not supporting fundamentalist groups in Afghanistan and support the real democratic movements, give them more space in order to establish a real government. And the message that we have for the people of America, that we think that we believe in the people's power, and we think that we are thankful for the anti-war movements in America who started to break the silence, who want to stand against occupation and war in Afghanistan and the killing of civilians. But we think that it's not enough. It should be more stronger, it should be more active, because we need you there. You will give us more strength inside Afghanistan through your anti-war movements, through your resistance. You should put pressure on your governments. You should expose the real nature of this terrorist war. And by putting pressure, I think how long they will ignore the people's power and the people's voice. I think this voice should be louder and louder, and you should come forward also to show your practical solidarity with the democratic movements in Afghanistan, with practical solidarity, financial solidarity, political solidarity, moral solidarity. We are in dire need of that. So thank you very much.
That was Zoya speaking for the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan last month in San Francisco. Tonight, Monday, November 9th, Malalai Joya, who has been called the bravest woman in Afghanistan, will speak in San Francisco. Joya is the author of the book A Woman Among Warlords. She will speak at the University of San Francisco's Fromm Hall at 7 p.m. She will also be speaking tomorrow, Tuesday, November 10th at 7 p.m. That's at International House, Piedmont and Bancroft in Berkeley. For more information about Zoya, Malalai Joya, and how you can support Afghan women's freedom, visit AfghanWomen'sMission.org. Stay tuned for Javelin's World.
Good afternoon, KPFA Women's Magazine listeners, on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Welcome to Javelin's World. I have been fascinated by the beauty of memory. Remember when you were little or you listened to a kid to say, do you remember that time that we went to then? And they get all breathless with memory. Memory is the gift of being human, to take our emotional experience in the here and now into our future and even beyond. Memory, it sustains us, and sometimes it holds us still for the hard memories, and other memories move us forward into our life. In Toni Morrison's novel, Beloved, there is a woman dying, and she asks her daughter-in-law, Seth, bring me something pink. But it had to be a specific kind of pink. So every day there would be pieces of fabric, flowers, and at the very end, Seth offered her tongue as pink, and the woman died. And I wonder, what was in her memory, in those moments of letting go of physical life, that pink was the one thing that could heal her? Was it her mama's palm of her hand, her daddy's bottom lip? But it was pink for her. There are other times in our lives that I believe that we must remember the parts of ourselves and our ancestors who fought to be human, who fought to be alive. For those of us who come from a history of slavery or fleeing Europe, those memories of our desire to dream and to be a side of our aliveness, to collect the stories of our grandparents, our relatives, collect them and put them in a bouquet around us so that we can remember how to be good to one another, to have compassion, to remember our desire to be full inside of our humanity. We must remember what color pink meant to this woman. And I also want us to remember the fact that we must take care of one another. We must remember that on this planet at this time, during challenging moments, economically, in the war, for all people. And if you have any thoughts, please give us a call, 510-848-6767, extension 608. We always welcome your thoughts. And also remember, behind every great man, there's a woman. And behind every great woman is an audience. Thanks for being my audience.
up is the Women's Community Calendar.
This is a listing of upcoming events for by women in the Bay Area for the week of November 9th through November 13th. Please listen closely for contact numbers. Maulai Joya will be signing her autobiography entitled A Woman Among Warlords, the extraordinary story of an Afghan who dared to raise her voice. On Tuesday, November 10th at 7 p.m. at International House Chevron Auditorium, UC Berkeley. Call 415-637-5720 or view ihouse.berkeley.edu. Coming up from the roots, Women and Agriculture, featuring Women's Earth Alliance's international advisors, initiatives by WEA's directors, music and food from the three regions where WEA works, Sub-Saharan Africa, North America, and India. Three Tuesdays starting on November 10th at 7 p.m. at David Brower Center, Kinsey Room, 2150 Alston Way in Berkeley. Call 510-859-9111 or visit womensearthalliance.org. Feminists turn up the heat for healthcare. President Obama's statements that his national plan would not provide insurance for undocumented immigrants or extend federal funds for abortions echoes the right wing's racist and sexist agenda. On Thursday, November 12th, buffet at 6, program at 7, at New Valencia Hall, 625 Larkin Street, Suite 202 in San Francisco. Call 415-864-1278 or visit radicalwomen.org. Performing Diaspora Festival features dance, music, theater, and media with Ana Maria Alvarez, Concha Tiempo, Colette Eloy, Opal Palma Disa, and Sri Susilawati, November 12th through the 15th at Counterpulse, 1310 Mission Street in San Francisco. Call 415-626-2060 or view counterpulse.org. Mary Watkins' new opera, Dark River, tells the story of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee and the biography of Fannie Lou Hamer. Ms. Hamer was a prominent organizer in Mississippi and throughout the South, and an important symbol of the grassroots civil rights struggle. November 12th through the 24th at the Oakland Metro Opera House, 630 3rd Street in Oakland. Call 510-763-1146 or visit oaklandopera.org. The Mayel Healer. Opal Palma Adisa is a celebrated writer with 10 books to her credit. A dramatic, poetic, multimedia show accompanied by Val Saran. November 12th through November 15th at 8 p.m. at Counterpulse, 1310 Mission Street in San Francisco. Call 415-626-2060 or visit counterpulse.org. Art as Propaganda Workshop Series. Fashion is Protest and Inspiration. Each session will teach a different skill and history of a radical movement, with an opportunity for participants to create art for a specific community action. On Saturday, November 14th at 2 p.m. at New Valencia Hall, 625 Larkin Street, Suite 202 in San Francisco. Call 415-864-1278 or check radicalwomen.org. Writing the Body with Elaine Beale, a workshop using writing to explore our relationship with our bodies, disability, concepts of health and illness, and our experiences of sexuality. Open to all writers of all levels of experience. On Saturday, November 14th at 1 p.m. at Modern Times Books, 888 Valencia Street in San Francisco. Call 415-282-9246 or view mtbs.com. Rape is not a laughing matter, but humor becomes a powerful tool in fighting sexual assault in She Who Laughs Lasts. The comedy showcase features comedian Sia Ama, Africa's most outrageous and inspiring comedian, Ali Wong, Christina Wong of Free, and Nisia Mosley of Where My Girls At, on Sunday, November 15th at 6 p.m. at Victoria Theater, 2961 16th Street in San Francisco. Call 415-861-2024, extension 301, or visit sf4.org. All events are wheelchair accessible. The calendar is produced by Yvette Hochberg. If you have an upcoming event, please send it to yvette618@gmail.com or mail it to Women's Magazine at KPFA, 1929 Martin Luther King Jr. Way, Berkeley, California, 94704. You can find much more on the calendar on our website at kpfa.org/womensmagazine. Please make sure that your event is wheelchair accessible.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Women's Magazine. This show was produced by Kate Raphael and Lisa Detmer, with contributions from Sefi Wanairobi, Javelin Richards, and Yvette Hochberg. Our executive producer is Amelia Gonzalez. Thanks to Everett Wilson and Women's International League for Peace and Freedom for the tape of Zoya's talk. I've been your host, Raquel Martinez-Sharp. We would love to hear your thoughts about the segments on this show and what you would like to hear on Women's Magazine in the future. You can reach us by email at kpfawomensmag@gmail.com. Or by phone at 510-848-6767, extension 608. Check out our blog at kpfawomensmag.blogspot.com, where you'll find full audio segments, articles about women's issues, and news about the show. Tune in next week for another hour of Radical Women's Voices. Stay tuned for About Health.